Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And as we give you more and more information, I know we've had to go a couple of, I'll call it, for your information or points of order, whatever you want to call it, in doing some derailing, I'm hoping that you're starting to make sense that the Constitution that was designed and inspired by the divine hand of providence in this convention, we still have that. That is still the legitimate governing document. There's been no power granted to any government, corporation, banking, doesn't matter. No entity out there, not even the federal government, has the authority to deviate. The only way deviations can occur is for the states to ratify an amendment granting the power to the federal government to deviate. This is one of the reasons why, folks, you will rue the day. I am here telling you, you will rue the day if you allow an amendment to get passed that basically creates a balanced budget amendment by the Convention of States that says, hey, we you know, as long as we don't exceed, you know, a percentage of the GDP, you know, everything's okay. What that does is it authorizes the federal government. It no longer contains the federal government based on the enumerated objects. It says just go ahead and spend what you want to spend. And to be clear, when we look at the 14th Amendment, we look at the 13th Amendment, the original 13th Amendment, when we look at all of these amendments that kind of came in after the original 12, which was really the framers themselves. Actually, the first 13th Amendment was a part of the original as well. So I've got to hold that line all the way up to the 13th Amendment. Those were really done by the framers. Beyond that, what we see is the second 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment, the 16th and 17th Amendment, and the rest of the amendments to follow. None of them actually changed. The 17th Amendment didn't change any language to basically change the suffrage of the state legislatures in the Senate. When we look at the income tax, it only changed the process of how they were to collect the direct tax. Didn't give them the authority to spend money on anything they didn't have enumerated within the Constitution. They were still tied to that. The fact is that they just started recklessly spending before that and said, we need this income tax. But the language of that did not allow them to spend on unconstitutional things. They were already doing it. They believed you'd been bamboozled in enough to think that they wouldn't change that language, or that that language didn't get changed, that everything was going on the predication of them being able to do it. So in other words, there's been no formal change to the Constitution allowing them to write a check, to take on debt, or to buy debt, sell debt, or anything else that is not within those constitutional enumerations. In other words, they can't take on debt to spend money on health care. They can't take on debt to spend money on infrastructure, you know, build-ups and so forth. So as you understand this, then the real problem is these new era amendments will literally open the Constitution up, because the language will actually change and move us away from the enumerations of the Constitution. In other words, we're still tied to those things. They don't have the ability to create a treaty outside of those things within the enumerated objects, i.e. trade treaties. They don't have the ability to create a treaty to give state land to Indians. They don't have the ability to create a treaty with the UN or the World Health Organization. These things, folks, you need to understand. So as we move forward, and this idea, because it's even out there right now with the Trump administration, with the SAVE Act of trying to assume more power, as well as trying to bypass these checks and balances within the Constitution to say, moving forward, they're going to create this new bill that's going to allow them to just continue, you know, to spend the money however they want to. They don't have that authority. Remember, the only laws that they can make that would be considered, quote unquote, authorized within that Constitution are laws that are in pursuance to the Constitution. If you don't understand what that means, in pursuance to the Constitution, it means that the only laws that they can make must be a direct derivative. In other words, that law has to be derived from an enumerated power, not an enumerated object, an enumerated power. And the only powers that are in the Constitution for them to create laws on is in Article 1, Section 8. So they have the ability to create a law regarding a uniform rule of naturalization, uniform bankruptcy laws. They have the ability to create laws that will allow patents and copyrights for a limited time. In other words, to be maintained short, to ensure that there's, you know, some incentive to be able to, for inventors to create things, but they're not permanent. And what we see today, they're not even, so that's why we go through the Constitution to show how they're violating these types of things. But there's nowhere in the Constitution that allows them to adjoin to a foreign international, it's not in Article 1, Section 8, to create a Department of Transportation, to manage and regulate our transportation systems, highways, waterways, rails, airways, all of these types of things. So the creation of the FCC. There's no communications control. For them to create the FCC, the FAA, all of these different administrations, they have to have the power enumerated in that Constitution. Just like labor, they don't have that power. So folks, when you realize what little power they actually have, this is where you can actually see that protecting hand from that divine hand of providence that inspired this Constitution. Have faith in the Constitution he gave us. Now, I'm going to give you a case in point. This is out there. But this actually proves the point. There is a billion-dollar corporation called the Seattle Seahawks. And the Seattle Seahawks had signed an agreement to actually move, and they got permission from the NFL, from the majority of the teams in the NFL, to allow them to move. That was the requirement. And now, this governor of the state basically says, because the Seahawks organization is ran by Jody Allen, or who, you know, the former, the wife of the past Allen, Paul Allen, who died. And so she has the control and the power to make those decisions. Governor Ferguson of Washington State said, I'm not going to let you move because you have to have a majority of your shareholders. He's making this up. He's regulating them with powers he doesn't have. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be calling the Seahawks organization. And if you go to the Seattle Seahawks official page on Facebook, it has the phone number. I invite everybody to call and say, Bob Ferguson has no constitutional authority to regulate an NFL team, an NBA team, or an MLB team. Now, as much as I dislike teams leaving and so forth, I believe that when a state becomes so adversarial towards its citizens, its businesses, and everything else, the only thing we can do is vote with our feet by leaving them. And now they're telling us and telling the Seattle Seahawks, you can't do this, and they can. And as a matter of fact, this is where personal nullification by the Seattle Seahawks can literally step in and say, you have no authority in that Constitution to regulate us. You don't even have authority in your Constitution to regulate labor, to establish the minimum wage and so forth and so on and so on. Where do you get off telling us we can't do anything? We're moving, we're leaving, sayonara. Now, if anybody wants to sell their shares because they're not happy with the business decisions of the Seattle Seahawks, that's one thing. But to see a governor usurp power and say, you can't do these things, this is how this collusion between government and corporations, it has to work because everybody has to submit. And when you get these little power plays, it causes these ripples and it exposes the reality or the legitimacy of government being able to, one, protect corporations and or punish corporations. They don't have that authority. Unfortunately, Seattle, or I should say Washington State, should be able to regulate any business that wants to operate in their state, but they can't force that business to stay. They can't. They don't have that authority. The idea of reciprocity, being able to walk out or move from one state to another, is a fundamental right of protest to say, I don't like the way you're governing anymore, and I'm voting with my feet. And for them to punish an organization or individuals, because that's what they've done. They've tried to do this in California, where the Supreme Court ruled back in the 90s when California wanted to create an exiting tax. You sell your home and you leave California because you don't like being here. I think it was in the 90s or early 2000s. And they said, you want to do that? We're going to tax, you know, so much of the estate and your holdings and everything else here so that we can basically take this money from you. They don't have that authority, folks. So when it went into the Supreme Court says, yeah, you can't do that. This is a right. A person has a right to be able to move from one state to another. And you can't keep them or punish them. Because technically what that is one, it's a bill of attainder, as well as an ex post facto law. Because when you moved into that state, when the Seattle Seahawks, you know, was created, did that law exist? No, they created the law to now punish them. The essence of an ex post facto law. I'm not a lawyer, and I'm so happy and so thankful I didn't get bamboozled into the bar training and indoctrination. Folks, all you have to do is understand the law itself, the constitutions, and you'll get this. This is why the whole message of this content, the whole message of this show, the whole point of Reclaiming the Republic is to restore the full rule of law, to get government back, these genies, these big genies and little genies, back into the bottle and operating within the powers we've created in the Constitution. They don't like it, then they need to come along and actually say, we need to fix this. And oh, by the way, folks, you do not have to accept the idea that your state was actually initiated and has moved to this day with this paradigm that they can change the Constitution by a mere majority by using a democratic form. Now, bottom line, states can do that. They've done that, but it is a democratic form of governing. It should have been representative. And so under the authority as a citizen and as authority of a person living in the United States, where the axiom was created in the Declaration of Independence, when government no longer represents you, when government is basically no longer governing you by your consent because they're making it up as they go along, when they're not abiding by their constitutional powers, we the people have the right to alter, abolish, what have you, and we don't need to abolish. We don't need to alter. All we need to do is restore. And by going into a constitutional convention, this is where we do alter. We take back some of these powers that we've granted them, because at this point in time, those powers would be better exercised and held by your counties. This is where the state will no longer be able to mandate whether abortion is going to be legal in your state. This is going to be decided by the counties. This is how you can reduce the evil that exists in the United States. Let those little pockets of evil demand that they're going to be evil and kill innocent life. The state has no authority. And at this point in time, we don't want them to have that authority, and we have the ability to do this. So, folks, this plan has been presented for a long time. You have to start getting active by using First Amendment petitions in your county and take your county back and demand that your county legislators and your county actually be the holders or be the sovereigns over many of the powers that the state now has assumed. Because they've assumed power over labor. They've assumed power over housing. They've assumed power over dot, 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 and I can go on and on. The point is, because we've got Tammy with us. Welcome back, Tammy. She's probably fell asleep because she's, when's he going to introduce me?
I'm here.
I apologize.
I'm listening intently.
And so what we need to do is we need to get into this content. I can monologue, I can rant all day about our governmental problems and how really we are the problems. We've got to get our heads out of our backsides. We've got to clear our heads. We need to understand what we've really granted our government to do. If you do not know those few things that they actually have the authority to do, and you allow them to do anything and everything they want to do, they will and they are running roughshod over you. This is why they're destroying the states left and right. It's happening in every state. There is not one state that's immune. Every state in the union is operating on this concept, this perversion, that as long as there's a majority in the legislature to create the bill and pass it, that is a legitimate bill. And therefore, when it comes up and people challenge it, the courts will allow it because the courts don't hold to any constitutional standards anymore, even though they're under oath to support it. Everybody is allowing this pool of corruption to grow and to seep into every aspect of our lives. And if you think it's not going to happen in your state, you've already noticed what has happened in your red state. And I know Tammy can probably speak up. They're decades behind us. But I am telling you that they're actually months, if not maybe a year or two, behind us, because it doesn't take long. Once you've already embraced this concept that the state legislature can make these kinds of drastic changes, all they need to do is to change the makeup of your legislature and put the whammy on you. And next thing you know, they're hitting you left, right, and they're knocking you out. They're basically going to beat you up, and there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. We have to demand our government actually operate within the powers that we've granted them. And the process is clear, folks. If you're not interposing, if you're not standing up and challenging them and actually proving, because it's so easy to clean your county today, all you need to do is vote for champions of the Constitution at the county level. You clean up enough counties, then it's going to make it real easy to start cleaning up the state level too. Because the first thing you may have to do if you live in a blue state is you'll have to have a constitutional convention. That's the first thing after you do these other things. But you need to get a majority of your counties on board. You need to get a majority of your counties all synchronized in demanding full compliance of the Constitution and holding every public servant accountable. And therefore, anybody that violates their oath, that fails to step down, is actually, and we need to push this, is actually, what do you want to call that? When somebody is falsely occupying, because I believe it's a felony in almost every state, when somebody is falsely occupying an elected official position. Therefore, all of these counties now can put in bench warrants for every person that should have been arrested and or removed, because the county should have already cleaned up their own representation. See, the problem is if you live in a blue state, you'll have lots of Republican or dark red counties, but the majority of your legislators are coming out of these few because it's all based on population now. And this was all done unconstitutionally. But bottom line, the majority of your counties can create these bench warrants to arrest your governor, to arrest your secretary of state, to arrest these people and to hold them in, you know, for violations of the law as well as a felony for occupying a seat after they've been notified that they no longer are eligible to sit in that seat. We can start enforcing
this. Yeah, but the problem is that even the legislators believe that the authority stops with the courts.
But if you take the issue to the court and the court deems it, okay, we can't do that. You're right at the state level. If the majority of the legislators think that they can protect themselves from the law, then they'll just ignore it. But when all of the counties, when the majority of the counties actually say, you know what, if we'll shut down the court at the county level, and or we'll change that county court judge to make sure that he is absolutely in support of this, or the state or the county legislators will get rid of him and say, we now need to replace the judge because he's violated his oath. It all starts at the county. So if the county is clean and not corrupt, then they can create these bench warrants, and then they can actually, when these folks come into their county, they can get arrested. And they will get arrested, and they will be thrown in jail, into the county jail, because they know that they can't move this over to the state. They can't give this over to the state because the state will just say, we don't hold you to the rule of law. We don't hold you to the supreme law of the land. We're corrupt, and that's okay with us. We protect our own. So this is why these people will sit and serve out their felony, and people go, well, what's going on? Well, they're sitting out over in this county in jail because they've been tried and found guilty of a felony. Well, what's the felony? Well, they violated their oath, and everybody will see the facts, and they're going to see the supreme law of the land, and they'll go, oh, my gosh, I did not know that that could happen to just anybody for violating their oath. Well, that's why it's in the supreme law of the land, so that we won't have corruption. We got to get this forced, and it can be enforced at the county level. And so these people will have to avoid it. And if they do successfully avoid the counties, that's fine. That's fine, because the counties will still move forward with a constitutional convention. And they will actually operate the constitutional convention. And in the Constitution, in the new Constitution that they put, the Constitution will only need to be ratified by a threshold of counties, just like the U.S. Constitution. It won't have to be a majority vote or anything like that. It'll be based on the counties, just like the federal Constitution is based on the states. And its ratification was based on what? The popular vote? No. It was based on 9 states put this Constitution into power and effect. See, we already have, and I've said this, and you've heard me say what the U.S. Constitution is it's the exemplar in being able to create protections from government tyranny so that the people can have and maintain their individual liberty and individual sovereignty. This is what came out of this divine convention. From the divine inspiration that they received, they gave us a governing document and a governing process that allows us to actually, starting from the Declaration of Independence, his involvement in all of this, going even to, into the 14th Amendment, shows that we have the ability to take this back without having to fire a shot and without having to go into the courts. The political power in America is the people. The people are the fountain of political power. And if the people back this, if the people back the rule of law, which the majority of the people, now we don't mean a majority of the people population-wise, a majority of the people in a majority of the counties, that is our Republican form of government. And therefore, now that is the majority, that is the rule, and that is the final decision. Does that make sense? Pause.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. So I hope this isn't even coming across beating you up. This is just an education that people just don't even fathom and understand. When we really look at, now we're going into break. when we really look at the federal Constitution, an amendment to the Constitution requires 3/4 of the states. If you're going to change, and actually when we go into the Constitutional Convention, the first thing you're going to change is the amendment process, so that it requires a majority of the counties, a significant majority, 2/3, if not 3/4. And I say go with 3/4. Anyway, we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so this is I don't want to say this is even difficult. I think anybody can grasp this. The beauty of the fact that we have a system that we do not have to suffer under mob rule. As a matter of fact, mob rule, if mob rule is instituted, it is an outright violation of our Constitution. We're not to be ruled by a democracy. It must be Republican in form. And therefore, when we look at it, if it is literally a popular vote, then it is not Republican in form. When we look at our representation, it would have to go by the legislative boundaries that are legitimate. The only legitimate legislative boundaries currently in almost all of the states in the union are the counties. This one person, one vote concocting legislative districts based on population is not legitimate. It is not legal. The court had no authority to do this. And so this is how we're going to prove that we, the people, and our counties are the most relevant thing in our world politically, in our individual world, your world, my world, everybody's world. Their county is where they need to deposit the majority of their political power. And in so doing, we're going to create a state constitution that's going to be just like the federal constitution, limiting the powers of the state, so that the state can't start getting away with like what the federal government has been getting away with, and they have been. The federal government's come along and assumed powers and said, you're going to assume these same powers. You're going to do these things because we tell you to, and here's money to go do it. It ends, folks. It can only end when you take that stand. We're the problem. Until we step up, until we step into it, you know, sometimes, folks, you got to step into it and take that, you know, take the hit on the chin. In other words, you got to step into that pitch and get hit. Whatever it takes to get on base, then that's what we need to do, because we need that base runner, because it's baseball season. Now, because my predilection and or my favors are towards football and baseball and not so much, you know, basketball. I mean, hockey, yeah, like soccer. You know, those are, you know, goal, score, what have you. They're very similar. One's on ice and one's on grass. Nevertheless, the whole point is I try to live with the spirit of that season, you know, that at least I think most guys or most people, you know, begrudge or aware of, what have you. So anyway, nevertheless. So this is very important. I can't tell you how important this is. I am not going to live forever. And I hope to live to see the day that all of this happens before he comes again. I believe we can actually make this happen. There's no doubt in my mind that when people start sacrificing, when people start actually working in the cause of liberty to help free others, folks, it's not just about saving your county. It's not literally about just saving your state and or saving the union. It's about saving the world. Because all states in the world should be able to bask in the land of liberty. The Constitution was made to allow that to happen. So one of the things that we kind of talked about, outside of having Tammy with us, and we were going to talk about that again today, because I know Sean had some some questions and some of these ideas, because what I did was I laid it out that we need an amendment to the Constitution, just to bring Tammy up to this so that she understands. The Constitution does require an amendment, and it's Article 4, Section 3 that needs to be amended. Because currently, Article 4, Section 3 says that no state can come out of a state without the state legislature's authority. Now, that was very apropos, and I think it made sense back in the days of the framers, because at that point in time, those governments needed to evolve on their own. You got to remember that none of those governments were anything close to this new Constitution. There were states that didn't have executives. There were states that didn't have judiciaries. Eight of the states actually had a direct involvement of the church. There was state-sponsored churches to provide compassionate services. There were so many different things about the states. It forced the design of the federal government to serve the states and not force them into evolving. If they were happy with how they implemented their common law, their trial by jury, because most of the states did it differently, because they were free to do so. We have finally gotten to a point where all of the states had on their own reconfigured into three branches of government and so forth and so on. So now we can see how certain states have actually violated the Constitution, and for whatever reason, there have been pleas that are coming out from the minority, but let's just call it the red areas of California. The red counties of California are begging. It's almost like the people of Israel calling upon God to please free us from Egypt. We need an amendment that would literally state or literally articulate that any state that has been in the Union for an excess of 100 years does not require the state legislature to authorize the establishment of a state within that state, as long as the new state forming has external boundaries. In other words, that new state would actually be touching another state as well as adjoining or still touching the state that it's leaving. The whole point is that you do not and you cannot allow a state to be completely centered in the center of a state. In other words, where that new state is surrounded by the old state, because there's this, you know, I just look at it as it still makes it a hostage, if that makes sense. There's going to be services, highway services, all sorts of things where that state surrounding it can literally harass it. You have to be able to get to a point of, you know, true freedom walking out of your state into a different state. The point also is, and the real reason for this, is to invite states to actually start popping up that want to deviate their true form of Republican form of government into the one that they really want, one, i.e. more like the U.S. Constitution than the way they're playing their games at this point in time. In other words, without having to necessarily go through the Constitutional Convention, or if the state legislature and the power that be will not allow that new Constitutional Convention to move forward because the majority of the counties have called for a convention, then that right there would be the trigger to say that we want to form a new state, because you've already got the threshold of more. Most of the counties of the state want a better government. They want their government back. They don't want this oppressive government anymore. Therefore, this basically allows these states to actually start breaking up. The real reason why this is important is because as we start allowing new states to come into the union, their clock will start ticking then. In other words, when Mexico joins the union, because they finally, the people of Mexico actually want to live in the land of liberty, they're willing to give up their language, and they're willing to give up their currency, their laws, and their legal system, and so forth, and adapt to becoming a membered state in the union, all of the states of Mexico will be considered the counties or the sub-government of that state. And they can have multiple tiers of sub-republics within that state. The only way Mexico and those states can start breaking up and dividing is they have to wait 100 years. Does that make sense, Tammy?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so when we look at the world, how many nations in the world are there? It's less than 200. Less than 200 nations in the world today. Many of those states, many of those nations are not qualified and wouldn't be qualified to become states in the union. Every Islamic state could not become a state in the union. We cannot allow a theocracy to join. A theocracy, especially like that, that will not embrace the Constitution. They put their government laws in the hands of their God. And so that can't happen. Same thing with communism, because state government and those state aspects, that state ideology is the same as Islam, where they want the, you know, they don't recognize the rights of the people. They basically don't recognize property rights, those types of things. So a communist state can't come into the United States either. Now, a state under communism, such as a state like Taiwan, or a state that's, you know, facing communism like Nepal. Nepal has been brought under China. All of these states that have been brought under China could actually, the people could vote like Hong Kong, and say, we want to become a state in the United States. Now, when it comes to an island state, the island state would then have to adjoin with, if it's the Pacific Islands, it would adjoin with Hawaii, where the capital of the island states would be still Honolulu. And there would be, you know, these, I'll call it a sub, like a county, being adjoined to the state of Hawaii. Does that make sense? Because if we created a state for every island, because remember this premise, this rule, a state must be able to self-sustain itself. In other words, it must have a militia that can actually do everything it needs to provide for its security. And a little island, you can't do that. A little island, they won't even be able to afford to have a sheriff. They won't even be able to afford to have any type of government, because everybody would be giving all of their taxes to the government for the government to exist. And you can't, that is not within the world of reality. You cannot have a government like that. Not in our republic. So it has to be a sub-state and or a, I'll call it a sub-county, a district of a county of the Far East Islands, what have you, if you want to break it down that way. But bottom line, the Philippines, which has 1,000 islands, would be a part of the island state. They have to wait 100 years, these states that are coming in, these districts, counties, whatever, they're going to have to wait 100 years to be able to prove that they can actually start subdividing. This forces them to assimilate. This forces them to actually understand this constitutional republic and how to function within it, so that they can't deviate away from it, so that they can't basically undermine and subvert our system directly. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're saying, like the different communist places, they could just vote amongst themselves. They would have become a part of the United States, and then if they did, then the United States would defend them against.
That is correct. Like Taiwan,
China, for example.
Correct. Like Taiwan. Correct. Or, but it couldn't be a province alone. It's not that it couldn't be, but a province itself would have a province itself within China. In other words, the existing states of China that existed, the original China. It's not that a province couldn't, but they would not become a full-fledged territory. In other words, they don't get officially onto that territory until every little wrinkle is ironed out. But it doesn't mean that we can't go over there. The world can't go into that state and start setting up military bases to protect it from any hostility from the existing government to say, we're not letting you go. We believe it's a fundamental right that people have a right to govern themselves. And if the government that they're working under isn't working out for them, then instead of having to suffer from a revolution, they can start a process of basically cutting their ties and evolving away from them and literally evolving into a part of the United States. Now, any other territories, or I should say provinces of China that would want to come with them would then be adjoining to that state of China. In other words, it's like a foothold for China itself, for all of China to basically come into the United States. But it would take a long time, just due to the fact that it's coming in as a segment. See, because the bottom line is, there's no way China's going to allow an election for a nationwide election to occur. A province might be able to do it, but we have to have an assurance that this is the will of the people, not the will of the government. So again, as much as my heart goes out to the people of China, the world has to start looking and shaming these governments and these states, or I should say these theocracies, whatever, and shaming them for being oppressive and controlling and being so, let's just say, colonizing. Because it's not like America is trying to go colonize with weapons. We made mistakes in doing that. We should never have done that. If a state wants to enjoy liberty, don't come to us and ask us to fight a war for you. If you want to enjoy liberty, that's fine. But if you want to maintain, your reign and, somebody bigger and badder than you is knocking on your door, good luck. Good luck. Our job isn't to save the world. Our job is to basically promote liberty, individual liberty and individual sovereignty throughout the union and throughout the world. We're okay with being the ambassadors and being the deliverers, but making it possible so that they can embrace this. But this idea of doing regime changes and the whole paradigm of our foreign policy over the past several years, we can't do that anymore. That's no longer acceptable. Okay? So, with that.
Yeah, so what I hear you saying then, is this what you're saying, that instead of defending other countries, first make them decide to become a part of ours, and then we can defend them. Is that what you're saying?
Well, so they need to know that they, there's no point in asking us. The only thing you can ask us is, we want to become a state in the United States. That the people, but they actually have to have an election. The people need to demand that they have an opportunity to change their government, to become a state in the United States. Because 9 times out of 10, the powers that be won't even allow that. So, like what we're looking at up in Canada, right, the province of Alberta, they want to become a state in the United States. and they've actually opened that dialogue. Most people don't even know this. And Greenland should actually be begging to come in. Should be begging. It is antithetical to the globalist agenda for people to actually become states in the United States, because the globalist agenda is to destroy the United States so that we don't exist, so that they can create this new form of government, this global communism. And this was the this was the whole plan with Woodrow Wilson and the League of Nations, to abandon our Constitution. Our own government came up with the globalism idea so that they could abandon it because there were too many protections. They knew that there were ways back in actually unpeeling and undoing everything that they were doing. They knew this. They didn't tell anybody. And look how long it went for them to get away with all of this until today. And these things have actually came out today. Yours truly. Now, I know other people, I've talked to other people that have, by using AI, have kind of tripped into different forms of Republic Review. But, and so I applaud them that they're at least looking, but I wish, you know, I wish that this would have been more of a collaborative effort. I really wish it would have, but unfortunately, there were too many institutions and too many people that were short-sighted and were not even looking for a real solution, because they knew that if they solved the problem, they would lose their job. And they like what they're doing. They're, you know, they're considered a hero by keeping the hounds at bay. In reality, they're just as bad as the hounds, because they're not trying to solve the problem. Go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, so with 6 minutes left, we are on Madison's notes of the convention on August 30th. And so on August 30th is where Mr. Carroll kind of starts off. And actually, in the convention, Article 17... resumed for a question on it as amended by Governor Morris, Morris's substitute. So Mr. Carroll basically starts talking. Are you with me on this? You know where we're at?
Yep. Yes.
So go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Carroll moved to strike out so much of the article as requires the consent of the state to its being divided. He was aware that the object of this prerequisite might be to prevent domestic disturbances, but such was our situation with regard to the Crown lands and the sentiments of Maryland on that subject that he perceived we should again be at sea if no guard was provided for the right of the United States to be backlands, to the backlands. He suggested that it might be proper to provide that nothing in the Constitution should affect the right of the United States to land ceded by Great Britain in the Treaty of Peace, and proposed a commitment to a member of each state. He assured the House that this was a point of a most serious nature. It was desirable above all things that the act of the government might be agreed to unanimously. But should this point be disregarded, he believed that all risks would be run by a considerable minority sooner than give their concurrence.
Okay, so Mr. Martin then seconded the motion for a commitment. Now, if you're looking at this, they're talking about adding, or, you know, basically adjoining to these territories that are around them and how to deal with that. And so what we're looking at is getting all of the convention to commit to this idea. So Mr. Martin basically seconded the motion, and Mr. Rutledge then made a comment. Go ahead.
Mr. Rutledge, it is to be supposed that the states are to be cut up without their own consent. The case of Vermont will probably be particularly provided for. There could be no room to fear that Virginia or North Carolina would call on the United States to maintain their government over the mountains.
Okay, so what he's saying there is that Vermont is going to come out of New Hampshire, Kentucky is going to come out of Virginia, and Tennessee is going to come out of North Carolina. All of the rest of the states do not have what I would call any state or any land area that would be nurtured enough and ready to become a state. And so when we look at the states joining the union, right, the order of the statehood, if you want to call it that, we see that Tennessee joined the union in 1796. Ohio, which was a part of the Northwest Territory, joined the union in 1803. Then the next state that joined was Louisiana in 1812. The next state that joined was Indiana. So in other words, Mississippi, Alabama, or actually Alabama, then Mississippi, and let me see what was north of that. Okay, so Ohio. So when you start looking at what was going west out of the eastern states, Maine didn't join the Union until 1820 with Missouri. So as you look at these states, I mean, they were decades down the road from the convention. The only question was, what do we do with the states that are already commingling in these territories, i.e. what became of what ended up becoming Kentucky and Tennessee, as well as Vermont? This was a point of contention, because the original plan was that all the land from the Atlantic of Virginia stretching across the continent was Virginia's, all the way to the Pacific Ocean. Same thing with the Carolinas. All of them stretched all the way across. Georgia, I think, was the same. So the point is, they were trying to make sure that there was this resolve and commitment coming out of the Union that new states could not be, you know, admitted unless, one, the state legislature, the state legislature of where that state was being broken out of, okayed it. So in other words, Vermont may not have come to be had New Hampshire not authorized it. There was a point of contention with Vermont because New York was trying to claim that that was their territory, when at that point in time, everybody saw it as New Hampshire, which is, I think, why New Hampshire gave up Vermont, or they basically conceded that Vermont become a state on its own so it wouldn't be gobbled up by New York and be basically added to and adjoined to New York. So Vermont became a state. And then it just became obvious that the best thing for that land that made up Kentucky became a state as well, instead of it being Virginia. Now, what you didn't know is that the West Virginia folks, they wanted to break away. Virginia wasn't going to entertain that. No, you're a part of Virginia. We love you. You may be backwoods and over the hills and far away, but that's okay. We still love you, and you're going to be Virginia, which is why I brought this up earlier when you weren't on, how Virginia or West Virginia used the Civil War to become a state. Because when Virginia left the Union, it gave the West Virginian folks to say, hey, we want to become a state in the Union. And that's how and why West Virginia became a state in the Union, was because Virginia actually did leave the Union. Just so you understand that. So anyway, we will pick this back up in our next episode. So folks, hang in there. We're almost through this. I venture to say we should be done within a week. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description edition of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.